Hello, hello. Today's episode topic is how to trust yourself with food when you keep breaking promises to yourself. So stay tuned.
Welcome to another episode of Binge Eating to Food Freedom with me, Katie Papo. If you're ready for genuine and lasting freedom from binge eating, emotional eating, or out of control food issues, you are in the right place. Subscribe, follow, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Binge Eating to Food Freedom podcast. My name is Katie Papo, and here with me today, I have mindset expert Shahar Kovetz. So welcome.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Katie. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. And if you're listening live, I see a couple of you already hopped on live. Say hello right in the comments if you're listening. Live, if you're listening to the replay. Lately, this podcast has kind of been a one-woman show, not because I even want to hear my own voice all the time, but because I've just been having a hard time scheduling. So I've been winging when I've been coming on for the podcast. And in past seasons, like season three, we had guests all the time. You used to come on all the time too. And I said, you know what, Katie, enough is enough. We need to get another voice on here. So thank you for being here. And you are truly the best when it comes to the mindset stuff around this. So today's topic is how to trust yourself with food, which can be a very tall order when historically you've been breaking promises to yourself. And I can relate to this a lot. I can't even count how many times I said to myself, you know, this is going to be the last binge or this is the last time. So I wanted to invite Shahar, who's an expert in mindset, to discuss. And he's, by the way, for those of you guys who might be new to the podcast, Shahar coaches our clients and is often working with our clients on mindset issues around food. So whether it's all or nothing mentality or building trust or learning how to progress or picking yourself up after you fall, he really covers all bases. So today we wanted to talk about this particular topic because even if you in the past have broken so many promises to yourself around food, this episode will help you better understand how to build that trust now and in the future. So Shahar, how about you start by kind of introducing this topic in the way that you see fit?
Sure. I always like to start by starting with the definitions of everything and kind of let's start with the root of everything. And so when we talk about trust around food, what do we mean? Trust who? We trust ourselves. Like, is this another being we are talking to? Like, who is this? Who are we trusting or who are we mistrusting in this case? So I want to talk about what causes, in my perspective, the wheel, that's wheel and circle of binge eating, right? And go through restrictions and it goes through rebellion and goes through restriction and goes through rebellion. So what happens is we have whatever reason, sometimes it's from emotional trauma, sometimes it's from just how we were raised. We have this negative relationship with food. We inherited some sort of a belief around restrictions. And so we restrict ourselves. We say, okay, I'm not allowed to eat this food because I want to A, B, C, I want to lose weight. I can't be around this food for whatever reason. The cause is not as important as what is happening in the circle. So I gave myself restrictions. I say, I'm not allowed to eat this chocolate. And then I eat this chocolate. I break the promise, like Katie said. So, and the reason I break the promise is because I rebel against myself. I put a restriction and then I rebel against the restriction. And because I rebel against the restriction, I say, oh, you see, I was right to put the restrictions. So I put more restrictions. And the more restrictions you put, the more you rebel. The more you rebel, the more you restrict. And the more you restrict, the more you rebel. And this is basically that cycle of binge eating and dieting and binge eating and dieting and binge eating and dieting. And the way I see it, the core of this entire exchange is the mistrust, right? Think of it as I like to think of it as a relationship between two partners. If it's toxic and they don't trust each other, then a partner will put on the other partner restrictions that you're not allowed to leave this house because I don't trust you. You might cheat on me. You might do this. You might cheat. So the other partner lives under that restriction. And because we crave that freedom, then we'll give a little bit of kind of, you know, flirting with that outside of the restriction until they go full blown to the other side. So you rebel and then you restrict. And it's like a toxic relationship. So if the way a good partnership works is a good partnership never works on restrictions. A good partnership works on trust and to earn that trust and to work together and to be completely open and honest with each other. It's not on lies, deceit, restriction. It works on trust and to better yourself. So the core of the issue is the trust. Or the core of the issue in this case will be the mistrust. The solution is trust, in other words. Okay, so today I want us to talk about how we build that trust and how we mend that relationship, that broken, toxic relationship. Okay, so before I continue, Katie, is there anything you want to add?
There is one thing I'd like to add, because as you were saying this notion, right, which I totally agree with, right, because we know, and we didn't make this up, that restriction is the number one cause of binges. And one of the things that I noticed myself, because I held that mentality, I would say, oh, well, I restricted myself and then I broke that promise. Therefore, it was the restrictions that worked. The problem is just me. I need to be the one to control myself. So I would then make the restrictions even more intense. I would say, oh, well, before I was letting myself have sugar in this way, but now I'm not going to let myself have any sugar whatsoever, right? I would just take it up a level, make it more restrictive. Of course, that didn't work. Because even if it works for a short time, like you said, eventually there's that rebellion. But I wanted to address one little thing about that, because I think some of us live in somewhat of a fantasy land still, that, well, what if I could just restrict myself for my entire life? And when you were saying that in connection with relationships, like, what if, right, we were in a relationship and I restricted you, and you did stick with that restriction for your entire life, right? And I thought about what that means with food, and what it means with food is it makes your world so small. And I thought about how that would connect to a relationship as well. For example, let's say I don't want to eat cookies, and that's my big thing that I can't trust myself around, because that's where I always end up breaking the promise. I might not go to some event because I know cookies are being served there and I'm afraid that I can't be trusted to be around them. So already, just by not going to that event, or even by going to that event but being paranoid the whole time that I'm going to break my promise to myself, already my world is becoming much smaller. And even if I successfully do not eat the cookies that day, my world is still getting smaller. And I'm when I was thinking about that in connection to relationships, right? It's the same thing, right? We can try to keep our partners from going anywhere, from seeing anyone, which maybe they will abide, but know that in that process, you are making their world extremely small. And essentially that is what we're doing to ourselves, even when we quote unquote successfully restrict, is ultimately what we are doing is we are taking away the world, because we can't be trusted to be in the world. And especially if cookies or pizza or you insert food here is there. So I just wanted to bring that up, because the idea of restriction can sometimes seem like the only way. But if we were to really play that out and look at, well, what if it was long-term and I actually was able to do it, even though we know restriction directly causes binges and it doesn't really last a whole lifetime to restrict. But even if we did, even if we could, now where there's a trade, our world has to become very, very small.
Yeah, no, add to that's a great point, because we have this tendency to deceive ourselves regarding restrictions, regarding what kind of restriction works. And we confuse between a restriction that is based in the need to control or the desire to control ourselves, between a restriction that comes from just something you don't want to do. So for example, you and me, Katie, we are in a relationship, right? And I don't have a restriction against cutting your hair during the night and make you bald, right? I don't have a restriction. You never told me once, Shahar, don't make me bald during the night with a shaving machine. But I don't want to do that. Now, I don't want to do that not because I'm restricted. Okay, I don't want to do that because I don't want to hurt you. So it's the same when you have food freedom. You don't have a restriction that says I'm not allowed to binge on two giant packs of Oreos in the middle of the night. And that's why I don't do it. I don't do it because I don't want to numb myself, because it comes from a place of I don't want to go there. It comes from a genuine understanding and a trust between you and yourself, and not because of a restriction. So people tend to look at that and say, oh, they look at a normal eater, and I'm doing air quotes, a normal eater, and they say, oh, they don't eat in the middle of the night and don't think about it. So it's because they're restricting themselves. But when you try to restrict yourself, all you do is think about it. So you're making the connection between you and the thing you are restricting so much stronger by putting that restriction there, instead of building the trust between you and your body through the different exercises. For example, in the program, we have a lot of this trust building exercises that you do with your body, very practical, very pragmatic ways that we build that relationship or rebuild or re rebuild it. And when that trust is there, you don't need a restriction because you don't want to do that. You don't
Right.
want to numb yourself. You don't want to constantly obsess about food. You don't want to have your entire life dictated by some sort of a diet, how do you call it? Like a list,
Yeah, like a regimen, a diet protocol.
Beautiful, yeah. So it's like a diet protocol that you are stuck to all the time. You don't want to live like that. So you don't need restrictions, even though you're not doing. So people tend to make that confusion. They say,
Right.
if you don't want to do it, it's because you restricted yourself. No, I don't want to do it because I don't want to do it. Not because I restricted me. A good example for me and Katie is us being like vegan, for example. But we don't walk around saying, I'm not allowed to eat meat. I don't say, oh, I'm just not allowed. So every time I go to the market, I say, oh, I want to eat it, but I'm not allowing myself. No, we just don't think about it anymore. We got to the point that this is not even food for us.
Well, what the example that came to my mind was when we were talking to Linda yesterday. Linda's one of our clients, and she's going through our program, and she shared the exact same thing. She said, because she hadn't binged in I don't know how long, but she had been binging for multiple decades before coming to us. Since working with us, she's barely binged at all, and then I think it was last week she had it wasn't like it used to be, she said. It was a binge. She would put it in that category, but she said it was nowhere like it would have been in the past. But she said, "You know what? It wasn't pleasurable for me. It felt totally different, and I don't want to do that anymore." And yesterday on our call, she was saying, "You know, when I think about, you know, because she, I think it was on sugar. And she said, I was thinking about, you know, eating sugar. And I used to think that I couldn't allow myself to have any or it would open the whole floodgates. She had also spent some time in Overeaters Anonymous too, where it's very abstinent based method, which can fuel binges like tenfold. And she was saying how she realized, like, I can have sugar. She's like, I just realized that if I have too much of it, I don't feel good. And she said, I don't want that. I don't want to do that to myself. And now that I've had that experience, like I won't, because it wasn't even enjoyable for me. And that's the difference. And I said to her, I was like, Linda, you know, that's exactly how, like what you're saying sounds so obvious, but it's exactly how quote unquote normal eaters think, because it's not based in restriction. They're not saying, oh, well, I can't eat 20 pounds of sugar. Instead it's, why would I want to do that to myself? Right. And that's where her mindset has finally shifted to, into that realm of, does it even feel good for me? Do I even want that? Because once the, that compulsion is out of the way, that urge, that impossible to resist urge is out of the way, now we can actually be real with ourselves of, do I actually want this? Does this even feel good to me? And we can start asking ourselves those better questions instead of just telling ourselves, don't eat that, don't eat that, don't eat that, which just continues to reinforce the rebellion that eventually comes. So how do we start to build the trust, knowing what we know about relationships, knowing what we know about our relationship with food? Like, what does it take to build the trust?
So if you look at it as a relationship, then the way you heal mistrust, it goes through certain stages. Okay, so the mistrust, for whatever reason occurred, most of the time, if not all of the time, starts with bad communication. When people don't communicate in the same language, when people don't communicate at all, that's when mistrust happens. Right, there's a famous phrase, I forgot who said it, but was, when you stop talking, you start fighting. That's the sentence. So when you don't communicate, the mistrust starts building, and especially if you communicate poorly. So the way I like to think about it is, think of yourself as like two different beings. They're not really different, but it's two aspects of the same thing. So one is the logical brain and one is the emotional brain. So your logical brain speaks in English, right? It speaks in English. You start to rationalize things. You try to build and it's logical. It works in linguistics. But your emotional brain is like Spanish, right? It's like love language. It's all about body language and moving. And it doesn't understand it doesn't communicate through logic, it communicates through emotion, through physical sensations. So if you try to communicate with each other through their own language, it's not going to work. So if you're trying to tell your own body, relax, stop eating that, just stop craving ABC, that's not going to work. It's like it's trying to speak in English to a Spanish-speaking person. That's not going to work. So if you want to, so as long as that miscommunication is there, you won't know what your body wants. You won't know what your body needs. And if you don't know what it wants and what it needs, then you can't serve it. And when you can't serve it, there's a mistrust. So even though, so example for a binge would be, because we binge when we want to numb. So an example for a binge in this interaction would be, my body saying, I need rest. I need to relax. So it tenses up, right? It doesn't say it. Your body just tenses up, feels anxiety. The heart start pumping. Their posture is going to be a little crooked. It's going to be a little tense. So our brain, in order to solve that problem, because it doesn't speak Spanish, it says, oh, I know there's tension. So I'm going to numb myself. I don't want to feel the body because that's the closest thing I can relate to relaxation. So I eat. And indulge myself so much that I don't feel anything. And I have that huge surge of dopamine and serotonin and all these pleasure, so-called pleasure, that is so much that I don't feel anything else, at least for a few moments. But when that is over, the body never actually got the rest it craved. You numbed, but you didn't get the rest. So your body still craves, still tense, even though your mind went through that relaxation, so-called. But it wasn't relaxation, it was just a numbing. So if I want to heal that, I first have to communicate with my body in the same language. So you need to move from your brain into the body. So you can't tell your body relax, but you can go. That is something your body understands. Your body understands body language.
I just want to interject because people listening on the podcast probably don't even know what you just did.
Okay.
So what Shahar just did was he took a slow, deep breath and then exhaled. And if you have been in that situation, right, where you can even hear, we do breath work with our clients, where you can even hear the difference between someone anxiously breathing, right, versus which one feels more relaxed. Right, we're going to have the reaction to both, but one of them will be the anxious kind of communication with the body. One will be more relaxed. So that's what Shahar's saying. The body understands is not necessarily the word relax, because how many times has someone said to you, "Calm down," and you're just like, "I am calm." Right? It doesn't calm you down. But what the body does respond to is slowing the breath down, right? That's a physical action, not a mental action. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, of course. No, that was a great point. And on that, I would expand and say, when that's how you can't fix a body problem with your brain, right? Because sometimes it's the brain that created the problem. And you cannot solve the problem using the same mind who created it. You actually have to change your approach. And you have to deal with the problem where it needs to be dealt with. So if the problem is in my body, I have to deal it through the body. And so the first part, like I said, if I simplify my entire point, if you want to build trust, right, like we acknowledged before, that the cause of this whole thing is mistrust, or at least the cause to continue the cycle is mistrust. So the answer would be trust. Then first you have to communicate in the cell language. So you have to move from the body, from the mind to the body, right? You can't intellectualize it. You have to work with the body through the body. Then you have to be attentive enough to know what your body needs, right? Because let's say we communicate. Me and Katie, we now communicate at the same, let's say we have mistrust between us, but we sit in the same room and we know how to talk to each other. We let each other speak. We speak the same language, but that's not enough, right? You have to actually build the trust. Now you can communicate. Now you actually need to address each other's needs. So now I'm communicating with my body. I need to actually address my body's needs. If it's rest, if it's, working on the pleasure principle, working on actually giving my body and my brain the satisfaction that it's looking for, that is not achieved by the binge eating, right? Because if binge eating was satisfying and you were content with it, nobody would be here listening to us talking. But the truth is, it doesn't satisfy your chorus needs. So once you communicate, you have to actually start satisfying those needs in a deeper, meaningful way, through listening, through relaxation, through the practice, through actually focusing on something that is meaningful to you, focusing on freedom and feeling that freedom as well. So once, the more you solve these problems, the more you give your body what it needs, you give your mind what it needs, then the trust will continue to build. Then the body won't feel restricted, because I don't feel like you're restricting me away from food, so I'm not going to keep craving it. And your mind will, or the other way around, and your mind will not crave that relaxation to numb itself, because it actually has a relaxation through the body. So the body is relaxed and your mind is not restricted. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And this is ultimately, guys, this is our rewired eating framework, right? This is how it all ties in. This is everything that our programs are based on. The steps of the rewired eating framework, number one, are reset. So let's say we're applying these same principles to a person-to-person relationship, let's say me and Shahar. So if I'm angry, let's say we're angry. I laugh because it's so rare. But let's say I'm angry. The first thing that's important for me to do is reset myself. That's the first stage of the rewired eating framework. Reset. I need to get to a calm place where I can even hear what he's saying. And this is the same thing with food. Without that reset, we cannot even know what the body's saying. And we often can, I see a lot of people confusing what the mind is saying with what the body's saying. They think that what they're hearing from their mind is their body's signals. And it's like so far from that. So once that something even so small but so important is addressed, it's like a whole different world operating from that place. So with food, it's important to have that reset phase where you bring yourself to that calm state. Now, once you're there, now we can be receptive. And the next step of the rewired eating framework, right? We have the reset, then we have receive. Receive is where I actually receive my body signals. I can actually know what they are. In a relationship, if we were to relate to that in our argument example, okay, I've reset myself. I've let myself get calm. Now I can actually receive what Shahar is saying. I actually have a chance to communicate with him because now I'm capable of listening. Whereas before, if I'm in some frenetic state, I'm not capable of listening or comprehending. So those are the first two steps of that framework. Reset, receive. Then the third is respond. Because after I've now received what Shahar has to say and I'm calm, now I can respond in a calm way where then he can receive what I'm saying, right? I can respond to him. I can respond to my own needs. It's the same thing with food. Once we receive the body signals and we understand what the body needs to feel satisfied, we can respond by giving our bodies that exact thing. And then the final stage of that whole rewired eating framework is repeat. We repeat this again and again and again. And that is how trust is built, because what you're essentially doing is you're repeating that process of communication again and again and again. That's that trustworthy communication. So if over and over Shahar and I find that when we run into a challenge, we reset ourselves, we are receptive to each other, we actually listen to each other, then we respond mindfully, and we repeat that again and again, what happens over time? We build trust. And it's the same thing with food in your body. When you continuously reset yourself, when you notice, oop, I am not in a good state right now, let me reset myself. Okay, now I can actually receive what my body's saying. Oh, my body's saying it needs comfort or it needs rest or whatever. Then I'm actually in a position where I can give my body what it actually needs, which may or may not be food. It may or may not include food. And the difference is now, because you actually listened instead of simply numbed yourself, now you're satisfied. And when we're satisfied, we don't crave. So the more you fulfill your own true needs, and you're not just tossed from side to side by the antics of your mind, once all of that is calm and stabilized and you can actually listen to your body, now you're at the point of where you're a good communicator, you're a good listener, and you're responding and you're filling all of your needs. And when your needs are filled, we don't crave so much. We don't, the body's more satisfied and doesn't crave in the same way as if you're constantly restricting, depriving yourself without listening, overriding your body signals or ignoring your body signals or numbing your body signals. It's a completely different paradigm. But what we know to be true is that trust isn't built just by saying, trust me, right? You go on a date with someone and they say, trust me. You're crazy to trust them, right? If it's just the first date, you don't know what they're up to.
Hey, it worked for Aladdin.
Will you trust me? She's like, all right, I'll get on this floating carpet miles above the ground. It worked out for Jasmine in the end. But for most of us, we need to build that trust through solid communication that we can depend on. So essentially what we're doing here, if you want to trust yourself with food, when you keep breaking those promises to yourself, is you go through the same phases that you'd go through in any relationship to restore that trust. The first step is building healthy communication with your body and the more you, and with your mind. And the more you do that, the more you can trust yourself over time. It just happens naturally. I think self-trust is a side effect of solid communication with yourself, just as trust in another person is a side effect of really good communication with that person. Anything you want to add to conclude, Shahar?
Yeah, just one final point connected to what you were saying. I really want, that distinction is really key to understand. When we're talking about repetition, is very different than what the diets promise. Right, in a way, the diets promise us a similar thing. They say, oh, just repeat this process. And if you do that, you don't need to think about food anymore. And you don't, and you'll have the so-called body or healthy state that you're looking for. But the truth is, they don't do that. What they do, they create a muscle memory that is exactly the opposite. It creates a muscle memory of food obsession. And constantly thinking about food, constantly talking about food. You're living in this entire culture and world where food is, you count calories, what I'm allowed to eat, what I'm not allowed to eat. And we have this belief that if I just put this algorithm in my head, this little machine, like I'm a robot, it's going to work. But it's not, because we're not robots. When it comes to food, food is a very integral part of our lives. It's everywhere, from everywhere you go out with friends, family, with your own self. It's your relationship with food is one of the most intimate relationships you have. It's always there. And what's different about our approach is that repetition is not repetition because, oh, here's an algorithm, put it in your head. It's a way that you are communicating with your body. It's more dynamic. It's understanding your body. It's understanding that repetition is just for muscle memory. It's not muscle memory to restrict yourself. Muscle memory to communicate with yourself. That's why it's much more effective. That's why it goes to the actual source of the issue. And if you restrict yourself not to eat and think that's going to be in your muscle memory, no, what you're doing is you're creating a muscle memory of obsessing about food. And the more you obsess about the food, the more you obsess about the restriction, the more you strengthen the rebellion. But the proper muscle memory, and that's the thing, binge eating is just a habit in the end. If you want to break away from the habit, you can't keep reinforcing the habit. If you want to fix, you want to transition from one habit to another habit, you have to build a new habit, and that new habit is trust, listen, observe, serve, right? This is what we are doing. Okay, and the diets promise that, but give you the restriction and the obsession. What we want to do is focus on building the muscle memory of connecting to your body, breathing, actually, like Katie said, knowing what your body needs and then serve it. And the more you serve it, the more you build the trust. And that muscle memory, that's why the repetition, when that muscle memory sinks in, there's no turning back, right? Just like when you're a baby and you start running, you're not going back to crawling because your muscle memory remembers to stand, knows how to stand. Knows how to run. So you're not going back on the floor and crawling again once that's sink in. That's a muscle memory you want to reinforce, not the obsession and the restriction.
Yeah. Yeah, you used that example with Linda yesterday too. That was such a good one. She was like, because we said to her, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you run, you can't go back to crawling. I mean, you could, but why?
Well, you could. Like, why? Well, you're late to the bus. You're going to start crawling to it, or you're going to run to it?
Yeah, you could choose to crawl, but most people won't. So, and this, by the way, guys, this is really what all of our programs and our newest program, Path to Food Freedom, which is our 30-day intensive, which you're welcome to try. It's the first self-study I've created where you can really take yourself through this process. And one of the big things about that I've always said is that this lends itself to lifelong freedom. Because now if you have that skill of communication built, that is something you can rely on at any age throughout your whole life. Whereas the food rules, what's the longevity really of those? Even if you just look at your past history, how long have they really lasted, and has it even really worked sustainably? So, but when you build that skill of communication, now you're in a position where as you go throughout your life, you only get better at this. Why? Because you have more practice under your belt. You have more time under your belt. So this is actually the kind of thing that when you learn these steps and when you take yourself through these steps and keep practicing them, it only becomes easier over time, not harder. We found that in our relationship, right? In the beginning, when we first moved in and we were fighting more often, it was harder. Now the fights end before they've even started. So, and that's the kind of thing that will happen with you with binging. The binges will not even start in the first place. Eventually the binge urges do not even come up anymore. Why? Because now you're living in such a way that you're truly satisfied. So I hope you guys found that helpful. And if you're in a position now where you feel like, I want to learn these steps, I'm done with the diets, I understand on a deep level, these are not working for me. And I also don't want to live this way anymore. I don't want to live under a dark cloud of food rules constantly. I want to build this trust with myself, and I'm willing to do the work to make that happen. Check out our self-study. I believe it will be a great fit for you because that's the exact kind of person we designed it for. So, and you can add on coaching with that too, if you want us to help guide you through that process, if you have questions and things that come up along the way. So feel free to check that out on my website, katiepapo.com/path, katiepapo.com/path. That's where you can read all about this process and what it takes. And we found that it's very accessible for people, even when you've spent years breaking promises to yourself around food. So know that there is hope for you. Binge eating is not some incurable disease that gets worse over time. Of course, it can get worse over time when we continue doing the same things we've always done. But know that this is, like Shahar said, it's a habit, and it can be retrained, and it can be rewired, and it can be as simple as learning to communicate with yourself so you can trust yourself again. All right. So thank you, Shahar, for being here. And please come back again soon on the podcast.
Of course.
Maybe next week we'll do another one.
Yeah, I'm down.
All right, guys. So thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon. See you on the next one.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe, follow, or leave a kind review. If you're ready to get down to business and work with me to end your food issues permanently, please reach out or go to katiepapo.com for more info. Be kind to yourself, and I hope to see you for the next episode.